If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Is one theme that will certainly be on everyone's lips at least for the next 6 weeks or so. The economic trends and themes that we need to watch for the year 2025. Now, key aspects do need to be considered. Economic growth from a South African and global point of view. We can't ignore the fact that despite that we're not seeing elections this year, geopolitics continues to play an influence on the economic performance of countries, regions, and of course, the globe overall. So what does a Trump presidency 2.0 mean for South Africa? What does this mean in terms of our GNU and the level of stability that they're trying to bring to the fore, and even key institutions like Eskom and Transnet, who are pivotal to the performance of South Africa's economic growth. My next guest this evening is a great mind when it comes to the world of economics, Ndumiso Kubeka, who is head of KH Research Equities, joining us this evening to give us some insight. Such a pleasure to have you with us, and Happy New Year!
Happy New Year, and such a pleasure to be here. This is second home to me.
I'm glad. It literally is. We've come a long way. And these are the conversations that get us excited, right? Yeah. Because it's like, oh my gosh, what to expect? And there's so many scenarios and probabilities. And I actually think for economists like yourself, this year is going to be a very interesting one because there's always another theme and catch point to be mindful of. But overall, maybe let's start just with the transition from 2024 into 2025. Earlier on, I was commenting to Roy that it seems as though the political noise has quietened down. But has it really? When you look at what's happening in Canada, what we anticipate with the US, and of course, the European Union itself has been through its own fair share of political upheaval.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think even making the transition, one of the anticipation prior to the US elections in particular, part of the hope was we hope that the outcome of the elections would be boring. And it's clear that 2025, the outcome of those elections are not necessarily boring. Because although last year was a big election year, going into 2025, I think similar to what Roy was saying, the sentiment coming out from a Trump presidency will certainly drive what happens to the South African economy broadly.
Oh, yeah.
And I think perhaps it's important to also remember as to why that is the case. So South Africa is a small open economy.
Yep.
The US plays an important role in terms of trade volumes and, of course, financial transactions as well. And so the interplay that happens between the U.S. and South Africa is quite crucial. And even to date, South Africa continues to be an important emerging market player when it comes to trade with developed economies and, of course, other emerging markets. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, the sentiment that comes out from that market will inevitably affect the outlook for 2025.
And the challenge right now is that it's too difficult to call, right? Mm-hmm. We do know that Trump has taken a very strict and firm stance, not only with his neighboring countries, Mexico and Canada. We have yet to see that being implemented. But even with BRICS saying we need some level of certainty to come on board. And if I'm not mistaken, BRICS also just had an additional partner, Indonesia? No, I'm missing the country.
More in the Middle East,
I think. You're right. Yes. That has recently joined the BRICS nation. So I'm keen to understand, is it how further does this complicate the stance of economies and even businesses in terms of placing their bets this year as these uncertainties still remain?
Yeah, I think 2025, I think in my observation, it will be really about a balance of risks across countries. So from a Trump or US point of view, and I'll try not to say Trump as often as possible because it's a big theme clearly in terms of direct and policy discourse. But I do think that the balance of risk will really be informed as to the extent to which one policy sort of negotiations can potentially be inflationary or not inflationary, and the extent to which it might affect their domestic economies, and the extent to which those policy positions can also be sustained. So again, the question around Trump's and saying that he will use the instrument of tariffs and so forth to negotiate, I think it's really around a balance of risk, which one makes the most sense and which one doesn't. The South African case, I think we, from an international relations point of view, we've certainly demonstrated that we know how to play the center in terms of economic policy
discourse. Hey, we're diplomatic.
Indeed.
Hey, sometimes that's to a fault, many have said.
Indeed. On some instances, surely it's to a fault.
Yeah.
And I think perhaps from a South African point of view, that has played out relatively well for us because last year, when the IMF came out with their outlook for 2024, one of the things that they highlighted in their analysis was to say countries that seemingly take a center position in terms of international relations are less adversely affected in terms of trade volume volatility, which was quite interesting from a South Africa point of view. But South Africa is also quite unique because it's located on the African continent, which only comprises 3% of global economic output. So the weighted output from a South Africa point of view is more. So it's not necessarily the case that, you know, from a trade volume activity, we get that benefit. So that's why I think the balance of risks becomes quite important in terms of seeing what makes sense in 2025 and how will that unfold in the medium term as well.
Got you. I think it's so interesting, and I guess it does really serve us in that favor then to actually keep negotiating with the likes of China and many of our BRICS counterparts, but also maintaining the relationship we have with the West. Mm-hmm. I double-checked that stat around BRICS, and it is Indonesia. They were accepted on the 6th of January. So, okay, we're on track.
Yes,
I thought
yes.
I was losing it there for 2025.
No, we're on track,
Let's talk about one of the I's you mentioned. Mm. And this was a key theme over the last 2 years, interest rates and inflation. And maybe let's start off by unpacking inflation. At the beginning of this month as well, we saw the Fed coming out saying, last year was a different tune. You know, inflation has topped out. We are certainly seeing it circle back. Then the U.S. elections took place. Now it's all about, whoops, we need to be cautionary because it does seem as though inflation might heat up again. What themes do you see regarding inflation and how that would then translate into interest rates for 2025?
Yeah, I think certainly, of course, the question that we've already highlighted around tariffs, then the possibility of it being inflationary is one key theme to observe in 2025. But also when you look at South Africa, the UK, China, Germany, and the US, the inflation question becomes quite important because there are two different types of inflation. But over the last 3 years, one has been predominant, and it has been really supply-driven inflation because of the geopolitical events that have been taking place, the energy constraints and the resultant impact on that. We've already seen the impact on that on Germany as well in terms of its manufacturing capabilities and its medium-term outlook in terms of its productivity outcomes over the medium term.
Yes.
And so there are very material implications that inflation has in 2025 going forward across varying economies. In the Chinese economy, which is also another important one for South Africa on a trade-weighted basis, they don't necessarily have an inflation problem, but they have a growth problem.
Yes.
And of course, the resurrection of the relations between the US and China are clearly going to come up again in 2025, which will continue to have that inflationary sort of sentiment around it. And I think that's why even the South African Reserve Bank stipulated in their last Monetary Policy Committee meeting that they will also take a cautious approach. The hope was that, you know, after the peak of interest rates that we had realized over the last couple of years, we'd see an accelerated cutting down.
Yeah.
But it's more of a slow-paced approach and seeing what happens in the market.
Oh, it has been slow. I remember last year, beginning of the year, everyone was saying the Fed is going to cut in the first quarter of 2024.
Yes.
It took us, what, September to get there?
Yes, to get the cut, yeah.
Exactly. So it's been quite a journey. And I'm glad that we've highlighted all these global factors because ultimately, as you've mentioned, South Africa might be a small, but it's a very open economy. And these exogenous factors will play an influence on our economic growth for 2025. Let's touch on the home base for a moment and maybe start off on the political side. GNU seems as though there's been some level of stability now, though the noise is always lurking in the murmurings underground. But this also speaks to key institutions that are critical for our growth.
Yeah.
Transnet and Eskom.
Yeah.
Let's unpack what this does mean for 2025 and South Africa's economic growth.
You know, when looking at where we come from with those important institutions that you've highlighted, 2025, we're actually on a slightly better footing in respect of those specific institutions.
Mm-hmm.
On the Eskom side, I think, of course, from a governance point of view, which is has been clearly a key issue in terms of the operational efficiency, of the entity, has contributed in terms of, you know, the reduction in terms of load shedding and, of course, beefing up business confidence in terms of what to look for and potential investments going into this year, which I think becomes quite important and also contributes in terms of the growth outlook for South Africa in 2025.
Mm-hmm.
Although still below 2%, around 1.6, 1.7, depending on what
which
happens.
Which is modest, right?
It's very modest, particularly given what we've done before and, of course, the need that is required from an employment point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Transnet, the work continues to be done. Operation Vulindlela is into phase two now, and colleagues are doing active work to sort of make sure that the institution is also stable and they also get into an upward trajectory as well. it would appear that even from a National Treasury point of view, colleagues are receiving more requests around assistance in terms of specific interventions, policy interventions to accelerate reforms in the South African economy. So I think even that mood, that momentum is quite important for those key institutions, even from an allocation point of view.
Yes.
We've seen the accountability come to play somewhat as opposed to previous years where allocations would happen or bailouts would happen and next year it would be the same case and the same case. So we're slightly seeing a change in terms of that trajectory, which is an important from an investor point of view, to be convinced as to whether or not the right things are being done.
Definitely. I'm glad you touch on policy and how that obviously is linked to the change in leadership that we see at some of these institutions, allocations as well, which I guess we'll hear more of in just over a month's time in the budget speech that will be delivered by National Treasury. That then takes me to when we look at where the world is, where South Africa is positioned, trying to make sure we boost our trade, and even company updates from the likes of ArcelorMittal, who are plagued by cheaper Chinese steel imports that continue to come into the South African market. It seems as though Operation Vulindlela is working, but there are a few tweaks that we can implement. So I guess, you know, as a leader, when it comes to, you know, identifying sweet spots where we can really use them to propel and accelerate South Africa's economic growth, where are those catalysts? Where do they lie? What more can we essentially do?
One of the things I think we've learned in South African history when it comes to economic policy, but also economies that have been able to rise from being developing economies to developed economies, is the important role of, I think colloquially the saying is to say, picking your winners.
Yes.
And I think in the South African case, but that becomes quite important. And I would suggest the following as to why it's important. Because of the features of the South African economy, where we have its business services and finance driven in the main, and yet we, of course, we have a large available workforce that is not necessarily productive. That combination is not necessarily the best combination if we're to look at it from a puzzle or word game point of view. And so that becomes quite important to solve for as to how do we then pick industries that can be able to solve that particular equation or that puzzle. Yeah. And I think that's where the policy opportunity actually lies for the South African case. It also lies because we are uniquely positioned on the African continent.
Yes.
Some of the largest pension funds in the world are looking at the African continent over the next 30 years in terms of 10xing asset classes, investment, and so forth. And so when we're looking at the positioning of South African economy and the role that it can play there in terms of inter-regional trade, there are massive opportunities from a policy point of view. And that is to say that in the nascent years, it becomes quite important for policy and allocations to support the picking of the winners.
Yes.
And then private sector also allocates its role in terms of what it's able to play, and we're able to scale up that particular activity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As you say this, I just realized 2030 is 5 years from now.
It is.
Crazy, right? Because it the NDP, as a former policy document, was really earmarked to actually see 2030 for greater development, 5% economic growth, I believe, was actually the measure that we were meant to target. And yes, we've seen the evolution of policy so far, but what you're speaking to and alluding to is this agility that we need in terms of policy.
We do. And it becomes quite important in appreciating, you know, the extent of legislation and regulation.
Yes.
And how regulation can be leveraged to sort of have that agility to achieve the economic outcomes that we need to achieve. The African Development Bank actually came out, I think, 2 years ago, citing a particular problem that South Africa and, I guess, African countries need to solve for.
Mm-hmm.
And that is stipulating that around the question of reaching financial closure of specific projects, that only 1 out of 10 projects reach financial close in the African environment. And that part is attributed to issues around project preparation and the sophistication of financial markets. South Africa does have sophisticated financial markets.
Mm-hmm.
We do have capable institutions around project preparation. We just don't have necessarily the scale of capacity to be able to respond to the need of infrastructure needs in South Africa and of course, in other parts of the continent.
Sure.
Acknowledging that since 2011, we've had water infrastructure needs to the tune of 600 billion since 2011. So the scale of the problem is huge. The capabilities are there. Mm. The questions around how do we scale that to be able to achieve the 5% growth that we cited.
Exactly. This is so interesting because it really helps us to understand, you know, the bigger pieces of the puzzle, how they come together and influence South Africa, the work that we need to put in that definitely speaks to, you know, not only policy, but having the right people and leadership in place and having a socioeconomic goal goals as well in order to meet those objectives, and making sure that there's capital. If there's one thing that we've learned is that business does, you know, put its shoulder to the wheel. Capital is available, and all of these are aspects that can catalyze the growth that we so deeply need in South Africa. I want to speak for all of us as South Africans, because we might sit here and say there's so many complexities around, you know, geopolitics, global growth, South Africa's economic performance. But what does it mean for us as South Africans? And and maybe let's simplify what it is that we should anticipate for South Africans when it comes to the economic performance. And perhaps it's always easier to talk about it from an unemployment point of view, you know, what it means for job creation, and maybe even sectors where we might see more growth and development of SMMEs come into play.
So maybe I would maybe approach it from, I guess, for an individual who's a professional who might be employed, the potential or the outlook for 2025 is to remain modest in terms of spending.
Don't say that too loudly.
I would think it's important. I think for 2025, it's almost a year that I would anticipate will set the tone from a consumer perspective.
Got you.
Given an understanding of how the global geopolitical events will affect our economy specifically.
Okay.
And I think it becomes quite important to ensure how do we continue to look at, you know, looking at ways of continuing of savings and so on and so forth. So I think those principles should remain. From an unemployment point of view, that continues to be a difficult one.
Yeah.
But one of the key features that will define the South African economy in particular, I think the extent to which we leverage innovation and innovative capabilities. And I think if there are opportunities that we identify in this market, now is the time to actually see how we can be able to leverage those opportunities, leveraging innovation.
Definitely. Such a valuable insight. And just when we thought it was Bobili, Malia Tupot, you're reminding us,
yes,
go
please.
Slow. Yeah, there's lots of factors to consider. It is such a pleasure speaking to you, Ndumiso. It's always a pleasure to hear your insights.
Likewise.
And really contextualize where we are in terms of South Africa's economy. So fingers crossed, thumbs held, leadership in place.
Yes.
Let's hope that we execute and do the right things to see the growth figures come through.
Indeed.
Thanks so much, as always. Oh man, wonderful conversation. And you're welcome to share your views with us as well. Share your voice notes, 063-688-0959. And I get it. Sometimes when we sit in our cars and you're driving in the traffic and you're hearing these conversations, you think, oh boy, you know, it's doom and gloom. But the truth is there's still opportunity. And maybe you're an entrepreneur who's leveraging innovation, as Ndumiso's mentioned. Tell us what it is you're doing, how you're looking to tap into those opportunities. Maybe you're someone as well who has taken a very cautious approach in terms of your management of your debt and your spending. How has that worked for you, especially now that we are in a cycle where we've witnessed that interest rates have continued to come down? And maybe you're someone who travels or trades a lot with international peers. How have you been navigating that environment despite the concerns around geopolitics? We want to hear from you. You know, we like doing the show with you, so share your voice. 063-688-0959. My guest this evening on the economic expectations ahead of 2025 is Ndumiso Kubeka of KH Consulting. Such a pleasure to have you again.
If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.